You're listening to the cycling podcast of the 2024 Tour de France with Mitch Docker, Richard Abraham and Graham Wiggles. Today we're in Villeneuve-sur-Lot.
Right, boys, what a day. What a day. It's preposterously long in many ways. But we've made it to, Richard.
Bon voyage, Brasserie, just outside Agen. Mitch Docker has really pulled it out of the hat.
Well, it is. That's actually disguising exactly what it is. It's a brewery.
You kind of get a whiff of what, something on the air when you're near a microbrewery in an industrial estate.
I felt it. There was something, I could feel it. You know when you can feel the rain coming? I was like, yeah. I think there's a brewery somewhere close to here.
Like
and
sharks.
Lo and behold.
It's your superpower, isn't it?
You can sense it. Amazing little brewery. This is sort of Australian brewery style. They're like, a lot of the breweries in Australia are in sort of industrial estates because they're factories with a little bar. And that's exactly where we are. You wouldn't stumble across this, but I'm glad we have.
Shall we go straight into the tail of the etap, which we didn't see that much of because we were in the car for much of the day.
On our own epic, weren't we?
Yeah.
From, where even were we this morning? Aurillac to Villeneuve-sur-Lot.
Well, the beautiful village of Aurillac this morning.
Yeah.
Village of Mur de Barre.
That was where we started the day, in our little apartment that used to be a cafe.
Let's rewind a second.
I knew there was a good reason we didn't go straight into the tail of the etap. Let's go.
Oh, here we go. So, the other day, I hid in the laundry, and as Grizzle was walking toward put his clothes in, because I said, guys, we've got a load of who's got stuff to put in. So, I hid in there, and I stepped out, and I scared the living bejeevers out of him.
The living daylights.
He's on the ground, curled in a ball. He was that scared. And so, I thought, great, I got one. You got to give credit where it's due. We come into this apartment last night, and it's three levels. It's just like a typical shop with, you know, accommodation above. So we went in the shop front, which is now a kitchen, and then we went up, and I took the first level, and the boys up from there. And I was last to go up. After I put my bags down, I came back up, and I was last to go up, and it was all quiet. I yelled out. I was like, boys, see you in the morning? No response. I thought, oh, cheeky bugger's just gone straight to bed. You know, all right, fair enough. So I went in my room, unpacked my bag, mucked around for like 2 or 3 minutes, go to the bathroom to go clean my teeth.
Got naked.
Got fully naked. Lo and behold, who's in there waiting for me?
It was a dish best served cold last
the
night.
The grizzly
wasn't it?
Bear was in there.
Mur de Barre echoed to the primal scream emanating from the Aussie.
He got me good and well.
You had it coming. It was a nice moment as well. You wouldn't have seen this. As I went up to level 3, level 4, I had to walk past Richard's room. Rich came out and started applauding. So I had a sort of round of applause to see me into bed last night.
I knew instantly what you'd done. I knew that this wasn't actually a cause for alarm, that Graham had just been just brewing this one up for days. But it was quietly it was, plotting.
It was guttural, Mitch. Your scream. The guttural shriek of a naked man.
I had to just, lucky I was naked, I just went straight in the shower and clean myself off.
I scarcely want to give this a voice, but I feel like you two are to be, I should keep an eye on you. Both
of
you.
It's coming.
Well, Mitch went to bed with threats last night. He was just sending threats up the stairs. And then you eventually went, well played.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's do it.
Good. So, farmer's market this morning, real treat. Let's do the tale of the etap.
It's time for the tale of the etap.
So, Binyam Girmay takes his hat trick at the Tour de France. Boys, the third stage win for Intermarché, Wanty and Eritrea's main man at this tour. Elsewhere, we saw Primoz Roglic, one of five riders, to crash hard thanks to... I mean, there was a lot of road furniture, wasn't there, coming into that final 10K or so. And Roglic and Bora were a real victim of that. Roglic has lost some serious time on GC. We'll get into that as well. You could see that his right shoulder was grazed and bleeding as he rode in with his team. Mitch, we saw Mark Cavendish relegated in the sprint, didn't we? As well as Brian Coquard, both for deviating from their sprint line, both swerved in a way that did not please the jury. Was there anything else we missed today? Does that give enough of a flavour of the headlines of the stage?
Yeah, maybe a small footnote is Jonas Abrahamsson in the break again, hoovering up, well, scant reward in the King of the Mountains competition, but he was first over the three Cat Fours today, so that's a further 3 points that puts him tied with Tadej Pogacar in the mountains jersey. He will wear it again tomorrow. I'm not quite sure how they work that one out, whether it's by who's got the biggest mountains. Abrahamsson has hoovered up all the little mountains and Pogacar's just done the big ones.
Could it fall back to JC?
I don't know, I'm taking
a stab. One thing also to mention in the tail of the etape is it was just another hard day. Mm-hmm. You know, a very, very hard day, and a lot of there's a crash early on as well with Nielsen Paulus involved, so you know, things, everyone's getting tired out there,
and hot. It's worth mentioning the heat as well, not all of the day, but it the temperature went from a sort of muggy mid-20s to a very muggy, almost 40 degrees at the finish in Villeneuve-sur-Lot. We stepped out of the car and it was like walking into a kind of sauna, wasn't it? Like wall of heat. Not an easy day.
Not an easy day. Mitch, what's it like for the peloton? What's it like for the riders on a day like today, when you were at the point of the tour where, you know, for one reason or another, and we'll get into this, we saw a lot of riders drop today. I think it was five in the end who were either over the time cut or climbed off during the stage. What's it like in the bunch when you know it's that hard, when the sun is beating down, when you are, I mean, we are halfway through the tour now, when you're halfway through a grand tour?
I've said it before, I think this is a really hard point, and not for everyone, but there's a certain number, you know, especially myself, is that in this middle part, you're halfway, so you're deep in, you got a lot of fatigue, and you're not close enough yet to sort of feel the pull from the end of the race. So it's a really hard patch this next, you know, yesterday, today, maybe tomorrow and the day after, the four sort of days in the middle here. And I think today's stage might have caught a few guys out, because on paper, you might have just taken the pressure off a little bit and gone, okay, we've got some bigger stuff coming. Yesterday was really hard, and today, you know, hopefully a break goes and maybe I can sort of have a day easier. But it wasn't like that at all. It was a really hard day again, and they're the days that catch you out.
It's a day where it pays to have a little closer look at the geography, I think. If you look at just the profile, you see a few lumps and bumps on there, but maybe you don't really get a flavour of the roads. We were pretty much off the auto route all day, weren't we? Scarcely going above 80k an hour. And it's that real thick countryside where the roads are twisty and turny. Mitch, we were watching some of the coverage while we were in the car and sort of saying, well, they look like they're going really hard, but actually it's the sort of roads where maybe perspective is slightly warped. Sometimes the sensation of speed looks faster than it is or slower than it is, but hard racing today. Hot, hard, twisty, narrow, lumpy, quite claustrophobic almost.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Biniam Girmay with another really, really impressive win, Mitch. And he had to do it the hard way today, or rather Intermarché and Mike Tournison had to do it the hard way in that sprint. It looked like they had to come all the way around from, I'm going to say, 12th man, in order to pilot him to a spot he could launch his final attack from, launch his final sprint from.
Yeah, and look, Mike Tournison, he's very experienced at this, and he's got a lot of power, and he's actually a great rider because he can do two roles. He can do that positioning job, or he can actually do the straight-up lead-out. And as a lead-out man, sometimes that is literally just plopping your sprinter into a wheel because something's gone wrong before or whatever it is. It's not always the glorious sort of, as we saw today, Dan McClay lead-out. You know, he did a great job too. But you can't take anything away from Biniam Girmay because he showed today he has the speed of the best sprinters. There was nothing else in that today. He came from behind and he matched them with his speed. Came past them all, popped out of the wheels and went, all right, it's mano a mano. I'm going to show you today that I've got the speed. And he did. He was the best sprinter today. It wasn't like it was an uphill sprint or, you know, there was a climb before or something like that. He just had he's got the best speed. He's fast. He's super quick at the moment. I know I'm saying something very obvious, but, you know, it was always this angle like, oh, it's a stage that suits him. It's been really this, that and the other. But today was just like straight up sprint.
Mark Cavendish was relegated, as we said, for swerving towards Brian Coquard. He'd picked Binnie's wheel, hadn't he? He'd picked Germain's wheel, not having much of a lead out left himself. How did you see that? A fair call on the relegation?
It was hard to see because we only saw it from the front on. I'd love to see the overhead, but he was all over the place. And he was a long way back, and Case Bowl, he dropped back. Case Bowl had a great position, sort of even like 3K to go, and Cav was right up there. Cav drifted back, and, you know, Case Bowl, he went back for him. And I was watching them because I was just like really interested to see the way that Cav runs his way through the peloton. Case Bowl got a free side on the right, but Cav decided to navigate his way on the left, and he followed an Alpecin rider right up to the front. And from that moment there, he was a little bit, kamikaze is not the right word, but he was sort of snaking his way to the front. And I would love to see the overhead. I'm going to have to go back and search that out, but only seeing the sprint, you know, twice now, he was moving from left very quickly to the left. So they must have seen something more from that. But it was a pretty, you know, even Demar, he shut the door on Wout van Aert, because I think van Aert had the speed on the inside there, and I think rightly so. I don't think there was anything wrong with that. I was really impressed, and I'm more often looking to the lead outs. I was very impressed with Dan McClay's lead out today, and also Arkea. Demar's showing, I thought he was looking good in those early in the race, and he's showing still he's got that form.
Demar has actually also been relegated
for
impeding Wout van Aert.
There you go.
So the top five, so Gamay takes the win, Wout van Aert second for Visma Lisa Bike. Pascal Ackermann, another podium for him for Israel Premier Tech. Jasper Philipsen, Alpecin De Koninck in fourth. Arnaud Delis for Lotto Destiny, five. Alexander Kristoff, Uno X Mobility, six. Phil Bauhaus, seven. Brian Coquard, eight. With Dylan Groenewegen in ninth. I could go on, but I think I'll leave it there.
Is it becoming a little bit too soft? Like, it just seems like there's just relegations all over the place now. Like, I don't ever remember being so many relegations. Like, this sprint, let's think back to Cav's win. There was a lot more going on in that sprint than today.
There was, but it felt a lot cleaner the way he picked his way through.
It's rubbing shoulders with Bauhaus.
As you see it, Rich.
Well,
that's only one of many other sprints.
I think there's two things to bear in mind. One is that there isn't a dominant or even dominant teams in the sprint that are
lining it out
and dictating it and kind of tidying it up. It is really messy. Alpecin De Koninck, who we thought were going to be that team, and they were the other day when Philipsen won in Saint-Amand, they weren't there. I think Van der Poel got caught behind the crash, didn't he, that took down Primoz Roglic. So that was why he wasn't there. They had two abandons earlier on the stage as well. And also what we discussed prior to the tour was this things in the works about improving safety. You know, we discussed the yellow cards as a potential idea that's being trialled. We discussed the idea of moving the which they have done on this race, moving the 3K rule to sort of 4 or 5K on occasions. And I wonder whether this is sort of part of it as well, that maybe there's just a rhetoric or a sort of general motion towards being a little bit tougher on things that could be deemed dangerous in the sprint.
I don't like it. I don't like where it's going, because it's just making these sprints like not the way sprinting is. It's just how it is. You've also got to be able to protect your spot. And what is Demar just supposed to open the door up for
after Van Aert
just to come? Yeah. Here you go, bud. You're right. You got a nice slipstream off me. Come through on the barriers on your way.
Well, the question is, if they're relegating riders regularly, is that changing the behaviour? Because that's surely the intent, is that if you relegate riders, you're punishing what you deem as being dangerous behaviour with the intent that in the future they do not behave dangerously. But is that changing? I'm not sure that it necessarily is. It's the second time in this tour that Van Aert's had the door slammed shut and the rider who did it has been relegated. It was Philipsen, wasn't it, in the first week, and now it's Demar.
And there are fewer and fewer opportunities. There's perhaps one opportunity left for the sprinters as well. So this stage, it possibly mattered more. I mean, you're talking about Nîmes now, stage 16, I think, as possibly the last out-and-out sprint stage that's left.
Tomorrow as well, yeah. Interpo, probably.
Yeah.
But Nîmes is the... Well, Nîmes could be windy as well. Could be a cross-windy day, but let's see.
We need to talk about Primoz Roglic coming down because of the road furniture. Wout van Aert was asked afterwards how he saw it. He said the road furniture as they came into that final could have been better signposted, and so although the first obstacle was clearly marked, from then on in it got, and I'm paraphrasing here, it got a little bit sketchy, and he felt that more could have been done to point out where the dangers lay. And then of course we saw Roglic and Bora rolling in. They lost how much time on GC today?
2 minutes and 27 seconds on the GC.
And it's not the sort of day that you should be deciding the GC for a team like Bora. So I think you've got a feel for them as well.
You do, although this is the reason why the GC teams ride at the front on sprint stages. It's to avoid scenarios exactly like this. And Mitch, you and I were discussing on the drive just here, you know, was Roglic far back? Was he far forward? I guess my point was that he was far enough back and he was further back than the other GC riders who didn't get caught up in that crash, didn't get brought down.
Well, there's only so much room on the road, you know. There's only so much room to have teams up there. And I don't feel they were far enough back to deem they were in a bad position. I guess I agree with you because he was in the crash. But I don't think that is the fault of this, that they weren't in the best position. I don't think the team would be saying afterwards, "You see, boys, if you don't ride on the front, this is what happens." I think they're in a good enough position because the crash happened in the very front part of the peloton. It was Lysenko who went down, and you could see that he just wanted to move on the right side to move with his team and just did not see the concrete medium strip and went down. It's actually a real shame. And look, I've got no idea what their plan of attack is going to be from here and what the extent of the injuries are, but something we discussed on the way here is, does it open up the door for a guy like Jai Hindley to go on the attack? And, you know, fellow Aussie, I'd be pretty happy to see him do something in the race because, you know, he's slotted straight into that super domestique role. And I guess you've got to turn everything into a positive here and not knowing the extent of the injuries. So it'd be interesting to see.
And 4:42, which is Roglic's gap from the yellow jersey of Tadej Pogacar, sort of in a bit of a grey area. If he goes up the road, presumably the other GC teams aren't going to let him do that. They would still see him as a threat, even though he's nearly 5 minutes down. But it's still a long way down. It's that strange. It'd be really interesting to see what Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe now do, what Roglic does, and how the rest of the GC contenders, how many riders have we got? Five riders ahead of him across four teams, how they respond.
I would love it, obviously, if he's not injured, but for the sake of this race, if he's not impeded at all in some kind of way, you know, it's just a bit of gravel rash, sure, that's something too, but because it would be a cool element, because at the end of the day, you know, Pogacar and Jonas, they can't watch everyone. They're watching each other so much that eventually they have to go, "Well, you chase him." "Well, no, you chase him." You know, like, and they can really benefit off this.
And the race would benefit, the entertainment value would benefit from a wild card. I mean, Primoz Roglic has got podiums in the Tour de France before. He doesn't need another sixth place to defend that. Whereas you contrast that with who is underneath him, Mikel Landa, even Carlos Rodriguez in fifth, you know, probably be fairly happy with that. Much more happy than Primoz would be, I think. So the race would benefit from a joker who'd just be like, "All right, let's just have a crack. Let's sort of lob something in here and see what happens," you know?
Rolf Hulldag wasn't giving the Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe DS wasn't giving much away in the, and it was a real scrum, wasn't it, Mitch, afterwards? they had 15 minutes on the bus with the team straight away before they came out and answered any questions. One of the first things that he was asked in the scrum, Uldag was asked, was, look, what happened in there for 15 minutes? And he really played it down. He gave very little away. He basically said, look, the doctors had a look at Primoz, cleaned his wounds. We'll try and update you on the medical status as soon as we possibly can. The most important thing is Primoz as a person. We hope he's okay, and all of the work, all of the training, everything that they put in to this Tour de France wasn't for nothing. And then he was asked, how did this happen again? And straight batted it and just said, look, we can't analyze it right now because we don't know anything about it. They haven't had the time to look at it properly, but massive consequences from the crash is the headline there. Should we do the top six on GC just to paint that picture? So Pogacar stood in the yellow jersey, Remco Evenepoel at 1:06, Jonas Vingegaard for Team Visma, Lee Spike at 1:14, João Almeida, Pogacar's UAE teammate at 4:20. At 4:40 is Ineos Grenadiers' Carlos Rodriguez, and then it's Primoz Roglic for Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe at 4:42. And then, Rich, as you've just mentioned there, the next man on GC is Mikel Landa for Sudal Quickstep at 5:38. Might we see a little bit more freedom with the mountains coming quickly in this next few days?
Freedom for
Roglic, or yep, for Hindley?
Absolutely. Yeah, it will depend on, I guess a lot will depend on how Roglic is bearing up after that crash.
I would love that, but I don't feel like it's those kind of race anymore. It's not like, you know, Pogacar and Jonas are sort of just riding tempo and people are just pinging off the front. They just ride a speed that no one can keep up with anyway. You know what I mean? Like, what is he going to do? Go up the road early?
We just haven't seen any of that in this race, have we?
We haven't seen
the peloton content to let a break get anything. And I think that's...
And would Roglic go in an EB, an early break, to just be out there churning himself all day?
They would never let it happen.
That would never happen. And the only way he would go is be on a penultimate climb, try and get some time, and they're like, okay, it's the second last climb, let's let him go.
That's the situation where maybe you can imagine a scenario where there is a break that's got a couple of minutes up the road and it's got a Red Bull rider in there, and then Roglic goes, tries to bridge, and it's like, all right, what do you do? Visma Lisa bike, UAE, go on, you're cool. You're going to chase that, or are you going to let him go?
And the thing is, UAE, with their men, they ride a pace that, you know, Roglic is sort of just trying to sit at anyway. So... yeah, I like the idea of it, but I just can't see how it would play out.
On the mood around the buses after today's stage, Mitch, you paid Intermarché Wanty a visit, just for a point of contrast, I suppose, more than anything else, to Bora.
And also, it was just like, hang on a second here, let's not get overshadowed by that. Let's understand what we've got going on here. Intermarché are walking away at this point with three stage wins and in the green jersey. And, you know, they've created history already, but they're on the cusp of creating history again with the green jersey. I spoke to the sports director, Dimitri Klaes, and he had some really interesting stuff to say. You know, winning one stage was unbelievable, he said, and three is a dream. The success, you know, from the team and Vinny with the green jersey in a great position. So one thing that stood out to me was he goes, look, we're the team with the lowest budget here, and we've already achieved a stage win, which is great to win three and to be wearing the green jersey, and the fight to win the green jersey is the highest we could possibly ever hope for in this team, indicating that, you know, we're never coming for the yellow jersey, and maybe the green jersey was out of reach and maybe it was even not even a conversation at the start. So I sort of love that there, and I was like, what does this do to your team? How does it change things, you know? And he's just said it's so big for their team with the future of, you know, having Vinny in there and the history that's going to be created. So there is a fantastic story brewing there. And you look at it, look, just aesthetically, look at all the team buses. That bus is a 1990s bus. It's because the team is a lower budget. And can you imagine, you know, having three stage wins at the Tour, what that will do for that team from now on in.
And it's worth mentioning as well, Biniam signed a four-year deal with Intermarché in 2022, so he's going to be tied to them for the next couple of years.
It's a project for them. He's already indicated that. Yeah,
and when he signed for them for the first time in 2021, he got an offer from UAE, which reportedly was much, much better financially for him.
Wow.
So it doesn't feel like a team where they might be struggling to hold on to this star rider that's suddenly come good, you know, and might be off elsewhere. He's committed too to that.
He, worth saying too, so he's on 328 points in the green jersey competition. His next nearest challenger is Jasper Philipsen for Alpecin-Dekoning at 221. So Biniam Ghomai took 11 points in the intermediate sprint, as well as the points he would have taken for winning the stage today. Rich, we listened to his press conference afterwards, didn't we? And he spoke very impressively. A couple of amusing bits in there, talking about how, you know, never mind today, think back to the first stage where his phone was going crazy. He basically said that he couldn't see most of the new messages he gets now, and he didn't expect today to be any different.
So it's 600 messages on his phone. He can't even find the team WhatsApp, he said.
Exactly,
because it's just
that.
Buried so within messages.
He has to ask his teammates what's going on. Rich, what stood out for you in his post-match interviews?
Yeah, I think by virtue of what he's achieving at this tour and has achieved in his career, Biniam is going to be a spokesman whether he likes it or not, and he absolutely nails it. He speaks so well. And he has to front up questions about his racing and about what he does in the sport, but also about the impact of who he is, where he comes from, and what that means. And he does everything. He just knocks it out of the park. I can't help but be impressed by him. I mean, he was asked about, again, you know, about what it means for him to be the first black African rider to win a stage here and potentially be the green jersey winner at the end, which I think he's probably going to be, looking at that.
Yeah, I can't see
Philipsen catching him. And really spoke quite bluntly and said, you know, I'm the only black rider in the peloton and I'm not really happy with that. Mm. I'd like there to be more. And it's very refreshing to hear that sort of straight talking, actually. I think we're lucky to have him, like, really lucky to have him as a rider. But you know, in terms of where the world is, where the sport is, like, I don't know, just constantly impressed with Biniam Ghomai.
He's a really admirable human being, isn't he?
Yeah, I think back to when Mark Cavendish won his stage and we sort of, Mitch, were you with me? Yeah, we sort of doorstepped, maybe it was another colleague of mine, press room colleague, we sort of doorstepped Ghomai getting into a van just for a quick word on Cavendish's victory, and you know, most riders would just slam the door shut, but he properly engaged with the answer, gave us a minute for a quick answer, and yeah, just a real decent guy. So like we often say, we don't like to get caught up kind of personally or subjectively into the racing, try and remain objective, but I can't help but like the guy and like what he's doing.
Different questions elsewhere for Team Ineos.
Yes, I went to the Ineos bus this morning, really as a bit of a debrief from what happened yesterday in the Massif Central, where Ineos, like a lot of riders, were found quite wanting, and where Carlos Rodriguez managed to gain a place in the GC, but by losing time to those kind of key favourites. So I went in search of the head DS here at the Tour, Zach Dempster, and asked him about Carlos in this Tour. So let's hear from him. Zach, yesterday, Carlos, well, he gained a place in the GC, but lost more time. How do you see yesterday? How do you feel it went?
Yeah, obviously, you know, ideally, I think if he had been able to hang on with Remco and Roglic, that would have been a big win for us. But at the same time, he did his best. So I think with yesterday, you forget how short those climbs are. They're like, you know, 10 to 15 minute efforts. It is climbing still, but at the same time, I'm quite confident once we get over those, you know, 20, 30 minute climbs with a fair bit more fatigue, then he should be able to be right there and hopefully take time.
Were you happy with his level yesterday in terms of, were you anticipating that yesterday might have been a difficult day in terms of his strengths and what's to come in the race?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's clear that Vingegaard, Pogacar, Roglic and Remco are more explosive riders. Let's be let's be upfront about that. At the same time, I think, you know, with a bit more fatigue and it was a harder start, you know, you hope you, and he was quite close. Obviously the gap then blew out, but at the same time he was in a group where there wasn't anyone with an interest to work besides Ciccone. So yeah, it was just a matter of getting to the finish as quickly as possible. At the same time, I think it's not like you know, if you can't hold Remco and Roglic and the other two on a 15-minute climb, then we need to do a doomsday scenario. We need to just stay at it, you know. I think in the last week we're going to talk about minutes and we've just got to stay focused on making sure he gets to where he needs to be to perform.
In terms of how the team rode yesterday, you know, we saw, well, even Visma Lisebike were caught off guard a little bit with the way that UAE rode, but also you guys weren't really present there in numbers when it went down on that Puy Marie when Pogacar went. Do you see room for improvement there?
Yeah, I think it's a balance of the objectives here, so we're interested in winning stages. So obviously you saw at the start we had Tom really active and Kwiatkowski. If we were more, you know, UAE's tactic was understandably with Pogacar that, okay, we're going to focus on him and make sure that he can hopefully win the stage, and they didn't, but it was an impressive show of strength, that's for sure. So it was a big investment of resources, and yeah, like I say, I think let's see what happens now between Vingegaard and Pogacar, but definitely I think UAE were the team that really invested. I think if you saw Visma at the start, they were jumping around too, so for them, but for me, there's two ways to make a race hard. You either put guys up the road, keep the race flowing, or you get on the front and rip it. I think UAE got the team to go on the front and rip it, and they've got the leader that can often ride off, but yesterday he didn't manage to do so whether or not it was the correct tactic, they committed to it, so I think we saw an impressive show of strength, that's for sure.
Do you think there's an advantage to be had in keeping your cards close to your chest until we get to the Pyrenees and then into that final week, whether that's by accident or by design, but to, you know, keep things a little bit, keep the lid on things?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're hitting one win bike races at the end of the day. I think Tom's performance on that gravel stage and what's coming up now, we were really interested in the breakaway yesterday, which we did put a lot of investment into that. And then on a certain point, I caught it because it was like, all right, UAE is going to take control now, and it didn't make sense anymore. Having said that, you know, that maybe there's a moment where they don't have a choice and we're strong enough to make the difference there and in the middle of the stage or whatever it might be, who knows. But in terms of keeping the cards close to the chest, I think a lot of this is it's good decision making based on instinct. So of course we've got a clear player in your head, but it all depends on their legs and how the other teams are racing.
So sixth in the GC, 4:40 down. In a lot of people's minds, that would be Carlos out of the running, certainly for the victory, potentially even for the podium. You were talking 2 minutes gap to Vingegaard, I think it would be third. Let me just get that right again. Yeah, Vingegaard in third. You know, we're talking over 3 minute gap to the podium.
Yeah, I think for me, definitely not. I think we're really confident in how things will change. At the end of the day, we've done two mountain stages, and there's plenty more to come, as well as a really, really demanding time trial. So I think it's like anything in cycling, you know. When Egan won his first tour, then everyone knew Egan was going to go on to win the next four. When Pogacar won his first tour, everyone knew Pogacar was going to go on to win the next few. And then a fisherman from Denmark's come out, and now he's smashing it, and he's looking in a pretty good position. So in terms of that, what it means for this race is... anything's still possible. We've done two mountain stages for sure. It'd be better to be 2 minutes ahead or 4 minutes ahead, but at the end of the day, we're really focused on our process, and I'm really confident in Carlos that when we get into the big mountains, hopefully with a bit of heat, then we're going to shake this race up.
Bit of heat, temperature-wise, you mean? Yeah. Or bit of heat in terms of racing?
Yeah, both.
Fisherman from Denmark. Fish packer, I think. Yeah. If we're getting technical, I'm not sure whether he got out on a boat in the North Sea and cast his line.
You know how these legends go. You've got to build it.
I think he hasn't got a nickname, has he?
Oh, well.
I haven't heard a nickname for Jonas or even for Pogacar, actually.
Yeah, apparently I pronounce his name wrong, so I think we're just... Now, I think when you become that good, you can just get the first name, so he's Jonas for sure. That's it.
A little bit to unpack there. Fisherman? Fish packer?
Fish packer, I think, if we're being technical, aren't we? I think Jonas Vingegaard worked in a fish factory, sort of shoving fish in boxes.
But that's fighting talk from a team that are not really in a position to be giving it the big 'un.
You know what it makes me think of is it immediately stands out compared to the respect that Pogacar shows to Vingegaard and the way that he refers to Jonas. And I mean, read into it what you like, I suppose.
Yep.
Mitch?
Yeah, look, I agree. You know, I think it's an interesting angle, and you know, maybe they don't mean anything about it, or maybe it's an in-joke or whatever it is, but even the guy who's challenging for the win and, you know, in the yellow jersey seems to show, you know, nothing of that kind of sort of language. You know, there's utmost respect, and that's always with Pogacar. That's what I love about that guy, is that he's able to give that respect to the, you know, to the people around him and people who, you know, beat him. So it's interesting that that is the kind of language that's going on in the bus.
I do think, well, both Vingegaard and Pogacar, given that we talked about their rivalry last night, they do need some nicknames, don't they?
We were talking about the nicknames, actually. Pog.
Maybe we can work on this and speak to some of their teammates.
Who let the Pog out?
Stony silence in the industrial brasserie.
We're going to need another beer for this, I think. Richard, Ineos feature in the list that you were putting together earlier, don't they?
Yeah, halfway through the tour, I was minded to do this because I was very conscious that Groupama FDJ and Decathlon Asia Desert have been more or less absent from this tour, certainly in terms of doing good things. So I was just curious to see who was the sort of, not the worst team, that's putting it too harshly, but which team needed the most out of this tour. So we have in ascending, well, sort of reverse order from most content to least content, the teams.
Least worst.
We have Ineos in eighth. We have Movistar in seventh. They have eight top tens in the race so far. Joint sixth, we've got Lotto Destiny and Israel Premier Tech. Them in fifth, Lidl Trek. They have six top tens, plus 10th on the GC with Ciccone. Fourth place, Bahrain Victorious, six top tens. They've got the best of those being a fourth. And, well, it's a French podium in the Tour de France, at least in terms of this random competition is concerned. Third, Cofidis, four top tens. Second, Groupama FDJ, two top tens, the best of those being third. And first, Decathlon Asia Desert, they've got two top tens, the best of them being sixth, which is a surprise given the year that Decathlon have had so far. Really, like, stepped up for a lot of races, and
the one race that really matters,
the one that really matters to the French team, they haven't done it yet. So, and they haven't. And maybe they've fallen foul of the fact that there's been no breakaways, but they also don't really have a GC contender. Sam Bennett hasn't really been up there in the sprints. So let's see how they can rectify that in the coming half, the second half of the tour.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, and with Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your favorites and still hit your health goals. From breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles, you won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at hero.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
So, boys, Richard's list there featured Bahrain in fourth, Bahrain victorious. Their main man for the tour, Peo Bilbao, was he their main man?
Santiago Buitrago was their main man, really. But certainly one of their biggest characters. Very popular rider, isn't he, Peo? Basque rider.
Enormously. But he abandoned today after a second successive day off the back, struggling with illness. It's the first time, apparently, and this thanks to Felix Lowe for this one, first time he has DNF'd in any of his 16 grand tours so far.
Wow.
So clearly not a decision taken lightly, says Felix. He wasn't the only one to abandon today with illness. I caught up with Fabio Jakobsen as well. But before we get into that, Mitch, you had some success hanging around the Bahrain Victorious bus, didn't you?
Yeah, look, I spoke to an old teammate of mine who is now sports director, Roman Kreutzinger.
Just to try and understand what's going on there, because, you know, that interview from Fred Wright yesterday really threw me off. You know, he was just talking about he had a bad day. And I understand it was a hard day, but Fred Wright is a quality rider. And I just did not expect him to be out the back because of, you know, bad legs or fatigue. You know, expect someone, you know, like myself to be out the back, you know, but not someone like him. So I was just sort of, and then with Pau Bilbao also going out today, there is word around the buses that there is some COVID hanging around. You know, we heard with Michael Morkov, Mikkel Merku, he's had to stop today. So I thought maybe that's what's happening there. But, you know, maybe Fred Wright was sort of covering that up in the interview for whatever reason. But look, chatting to Roman Kreuzinger, the ultimate professional, he said, look, Fred Wright, he really did just have a bad day, and he suffered a lot and we lost him, and he's finding out from his coaches what really went wrong. So I said, well, what happened with Pau Bilbao? And he said, yes, they didn't feel great. After medical consultation, they decided to take him out to recover because the season doesn't end at the Tour de France. There's a lot more goals. When I asked him the question about, you know, is it COVID? He said, look, that's just a question for the doctor. I think we're quite fine. The rest of the team is okay. Pao got sick, but now we have to understand exactly what it is. So he sort of left the door open there a little bit. But look, I'm not suggesting it is that, but there was no, it's definitely not COVID. And there was no, like, it is COVID. He sort of just navigated around that.
But COVID, it's worth saying, is kind of a rumour. You know, it's this gossip going round the peloton that there are some teams that do have it in their squads. The riders are still riding if they can. Morkov, it should be said, did cite COVID as the reason why he DNF'd. DNS'd. Isn't here anymore.
Did not start.
Astana seemed to be the only team, or one of the only teams, who were happy to say the C word out loud.
They're owning
it. Seems to be a taboo.
It
seems to be a taboo word. But seriously, it's still not something that
Which
the peloton as a whole.
About?
You know fine well. But it seems to be not a word that most of the peloton, most of the teams, are comfortable saying out loud.
Why is that? Like, because clearly you can't hide it, right? If you've got COVID, you can't just suddenly hide it for a couple of days and race on. What's the consequence if you say, hey, look, there's a couple of riders who've got COVID? They're not going to throw teams out. Why are they trying to hide it?
I think it reflects what's going on in society, that this disease that had such a tremendous societal impact in terms of how we dealt with it, how the world dealt with it, that has now just become normalised. And there's an awkwardness about it being normal. This idea that it is just the same as flu and it's okay, it's going to be here with us for the future and we just have to get on with it, still feels awkward. And I think from an image perspective, if you have a team that's got some cases of COVID, then I don't think those teams would feel comfortable owning that.
Yeah.
And sending their riders out to race, not least for their own riders' health and safety, going through the ardours of a Tour de France while suffering from COVID, but also for the riders around them and the staff and everybody else who's working on the tour. Because, I mean, the amount of contact between people on the tour sort of has to be seen to be believed in a way. It's not like the riders are in a little bubble. Everybody is shaking hands, touching stuff, coming into very close contact with each other. This is why there were so many changes when the tour took place in those COVID years, right? So it's what we see in cycling is just a reflection of the world.
This has our comfort in talking about it and using Mitch the C word largely stems from Mark Cavendish's interview this morning with Seb Piquet that Seb was generous enough to allow us to listen in on. Shall we hear that now?
Is it all bibbidi bobbidi boo? What is that all about?
I see. It's a special word. So I've worked many years with my psychologist, Professor David Spindler, and he works with neuroscience, and I'm quite a temperamental character. I get happy, even in a sprint, you know. I'm quite calm, but I need things to stay kind of happy. And my smallest daughter, I've got five kids, my smallest daughter, Astrid, she's nearly two, and she goes to baby ballet, and she's in a little tutu. Peter sent me a video when I was away training for this. And she's in a little tutu, and she's got a little magic wand, and they play that song. It's from Cinderella, Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo. I watch this video, and just every time I watch this video, it makes me happy. So Mark says it in the radio, and it just fills me with good feelings, you know. It's, it just reminds me of who I do for me. I do for all the kids and people and everyone else, but this particular memory is very special, and it gives me good feelings coming to a finish. So,
could you sing Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo for us?
Well, I know Salah could do something. I do Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo. Put it together, and what have you got? Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo.
Well, on a different note, Michael is out. What's going on there?
COVID. I think he hasn't really got big symptoms and that, but for his own health and for the health of everybody else, I think he made the right decision. It's very, very disappointing for both professional and personal reasons, you know. Super sad to see him go, but like I said, for his own health, for that, I know there's riders in the peloton riding with COVID, and puts everybody at risk. It's we'll do the right thing.
It's going to change quite a few things for that sprint finish, possibly today.
Yeah, we've got to adapt, you know. For me, the most important thing is he's healthy, and he's got family, he's got a career. He announced his retirement last week. He's got a career after, he's got a wife and kids, beautiful family, and the most important thing is his long term health. That's more than any other bike race.
Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo.
Very good, Mitch. So off air, Mitch has just said, off air, like we're live, you've just said Beauty and the Beast, because of course that's what Mark Cavendish has just discussed in terms of what makes him feel better when he is finding it hard on the bike. But it was the light in the dark going from one to the other, the beauty of that little bit of lightness from Mark Renshaw in the team car, to talking openly about, you know, we know COVID is in the peloton. Your old mate Tom Southam at EF, I had a chat with him this morning. He said, conversely, that the only tour in his memory that EF have finished with all riders healthy was the COVID tour. But it's not like, and Mitch, you'll know this from your time there too, it's not like the riders are not taking every precaution that they can. What do you make of this kind of overarching question of we can't really say it out loud yet as a peloton?
I don't really know. That's why I asked you guys that question. I don't really know why they are hiding it and keeping it in the dark and that sort of thing. Like, you got COVID, you're out. You know, like, I think to sort of talk about what you're saying, back in those days, being on the team, EF really did take all precautions. They were advised from a medical team in the US. And I feel like we were really one of the best, if not the best team, the way we went about things and spent a lot of money to protect us. Separate rooms, you know, all the hygiene we had around staff. Things that we were doing was annoying. But like you just said there, they were the only team that didn't lose anyone. So no teams are at that level anymore. So, and even we know that from around the buses. In 2021, I was at the tour interviewing, and it was the worst experience I ever had as a journo. I didn't know any different at that point. It's my first time. It's this mixed zone, shut off from everyone with a mask on. I was like, I don't know if I could be a journo if this is what it is. So we're not doing that now. We're in scrums. I haven't experienced a scrum before. This is sweaty scrums. You are just armpit deep with like 30 other journos, and that's what it is now, and that's what it used to be, I guess. I don't know, you guys can tell me about the armpits and all that.
Yeah,
but
yeah, there was a term which I won't repeat because it was quite blue. You came up with a great word the other day, didn't you? Sludge.
At the
end of the day,
sludge.
You get covered in Tour de France sludge. Today was a sludgy day, wasn't it? Hot. You kind of just accumulate it, don't you? But remember, it's amazing really how quickly that the world has sort of forgotten that, at least in the Western world where we were all living, if you had COVID-19, you're basically sort of quarantined. You were told to stay at home, more or less had a big X put on your door, and the plague doctor would come round, and you know, after 2 weeks you might be allowed to go out and be a normal person again. But it was very much like, no, you're not allowed out in society because you are a risk, and we don't trust you to go out and wash your hands or not touch anything. So that was how the world was treating the disease, and there's still a hangover from that, isn't it? You know, it's not possible to just suddenly say, yeah, it's all right, actually, you go out, it's fine. And I think I can speak from my own experience of someone who's kind of had to deal with a bit of long COVID stuff. The scientific understanding, the medical understanding, isn't good enough, isn't advanced enough to know exactly what the risks are, to definitively say it's okay to let people, in this case riders, out into a workplace and potentially infect their colleagues. I'm just waiting for sort of confirmation from one of our colleagues in the press room, Hans-Peter de Vlieger of Het Nieuwsblad, I believe, not Het Laatste News, in Belgium, because I'd heard that Sepp van Marck had his career sort of basically brought short by repeated COVID infections. I don't want to state that as fact. It was said to, I overheard it today in an interview going on, and what is true is that Sepp van Marck did get repeated infections of COVID, which affected the final years of his racing because he was ill and out of action. And I think there is still a question mark over whether riders who are positive should be allowed out into the peloton to engage and interact with the rest of the world. And the same go for any journalist or sponsor or anybody on the tour.
Interesting point on the riders who are positive, because they're not necessarily being tested as a matter of routine. I spoke to a couple of teams today, and they said that we're not testing as a matter of routine. I also asked one of the broadcasters, one of our colleagues roaming around with a camera, whether they had been asked specifically not to ask the COVID question, just because it was kind of still being danced around. So I asked Fabio Jakobsen whether he had been tested. Let's hear what he's got to say. He of course climbed off today.
How do you feel after such a day?
Not great. Not sick, but I'm also not feeling well. Yesterday was a big impact. Yesterday during the straights, I was also not feeling great. Then now in the beginning, I had to let the peloton go. I couldn't pedal faster. The legs were burning, and they just blocked. I was hoping maybe the peloton slowed down and I could come back and recover, but I think the peloton never slowed down, so then it was race over.
And the race will get, with the Pyrenees, harder and harder? Was it in your mind also?
No, it's just if you're not feeling well, I think the Tour de France is not a place to be. And if you drop so early in the beginning, then you don't belong here. Yeah, like I said, I'm just not feeling well. I'm not sick, but I'm also not top fit. And the Tour, you have to be in the Tour if you're top fit and not like me.
Thanks, Fabio.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Can I ask one question, Fabio? Have you taken a lateral flow test? Do you test for COVID as a matter of routine?
I have not tested, but if the dog wants me to, then I will. But I am wearing a mask in the bus when I'm close to the other riders because I don't want to spread anything. I think many teams have had viruses already, so it could be that I'm also a victim of one of those.
Okay, mate. Hope you feel better soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Henry.
So Fabio Jakobsen there, he fronted up. We hope that he recovers quickly. We hope that it's not COVID. And Rich, as we were saying earlier, we hope that it is just these localized examples of the virus and not something that that affects the race any more significantly than that.
L'étape de demain, le dîner d'hier. Tomorrow's stage, yesterday's dinner.
Richard, you've got an excellent memory for names. The name of the hotel that we ate at last night.
I couldn't even remember where we were or what I ate last night. It's got to that point in the tour. But I do know that it was a Logis de France, which is a sort of franchise umbrella mark for these hotels that are often like auberges in quite small towns or villages out in the sticks, and it's kind of like a mark of pretty decent quality. They're all independently run, but you know, you're going to get a good night and a good meal, and a good meal we did have.
Well, you and me did. So we went for the tuna, which I thought was superb. I thought that was actually the best meal we've had since we've got here. Mitch had to sit and stew, and then that's not quite true. Your steak was delivered in a timely fashion, but your mash?
What was the mash?
Was not.
The mash was aligo, which I'm not quite sure on the proportions, but there's a good bit of cheese stirred into the mash. It's a specialty, isn't it?
It's melted cheese with a sprinkle of potato.
I thought you dwelt on the cheese there cheese. Quite nicely as well.
Grommet. Mitch is looking at me with like, what? These Brits with their references.
Mitch,
again.
You were upset. You were upset. And
you got Wallace
so.
And Gromit in. Okay, you do know. Anyway, the aligo eventually.
It was a shame because all the meals were delivered, and I had a fantastic steak, but unfortunately, the mash wasn't delivered, and I didn't want to eat just a whole bowl of melted cheese without the steak. So I waited and I waited and I waited, and eventually, you guys had finished your dinner, and I was still waiting. And then so I took my steak back in and said, "Hey, look, come on."
And then the guy tried to sort of put it on you as well, which you weren't best pleased with.
Do you want me to make you a whole new steak? Do you really want me to do that? And I was like, well, do you want me to eat a cold one?
It was a sort of strange standoff, wasn't there? A little bit of discomfort, which is not always pleasant.
And eventually he got the vibes. He goes, we'll get you a new steak. Yeah. I was like, look, I don't want to be that guy, but like, I have been out here for 20 minutes waiting with my steak in front of me.
By which point England were, what, drawing?
Yeah. Well, so we watched it on my phone, didn't we? A very successful evening in the end, but it's funny, isn't it, when you are, as you and me are, Rich, football fans, the tour is so all consuming, and you put so much into doing it justice and reporting on it, that in a strange way the football sort of, even though it was an England semi-final, which as a, you know, as a teenage lad I'd have been over the moon with.
Do we have a Harry Kane interview?
What's
a quote?
We didn't get anything from Harry, I'm sorry to say.
He spoke to us earlier on a long drive, didn't he? I think
he was delighted by Binnie McGuire's hat trick.
Do we have a
Harry Kane likes a hat trick? Binnie McGuire's got one.
Do we want to plug him in?
They're both on three. Harry Kane's got three goals in this tournament, and Binnie McGuire's got three stage wins.
We had some fantastic impersonations on the way here, and these two guys are now backpedalling out of it. Give us a Harry Kane impersonation.
No, Mitch, it's a question of taste. Tomorrow's stage, then. Two Category 4 climbs towards the end. It's going to be a fast finish. There's a gentle dip towards that last kilometre. And then we are flat to the line. But stage 13, Agen to Pau, Richard, 165.3 kilometres.
Yes, just as we were driving into the finish today in Villeneuve-sur-Lot, I saw the cooling towers of a nuclear power station, which is on the Garonne Valley. And I can remember spotting them from the peak that is right next to the Port de Payers, which is right in the Pyrenees. And you could sort of see them on a really clear day. So that, to me, was like the first little hint that the Pyrenees are just on the horizon. But before we get there, this is more of a sprint than today. However, those two kickers in the final hour of racing, and plus a little kind of sawtooth profile afterwards, are going to make things interesting.
Mitch, you think tomorrow might be another one, for Binium.
Yeah, well, I'm speaking to Dimitri Kreis. He said, look, tomorrow actually suits him maybe even more because, you know, it is shorter, but the climbs are harder and they're going for it. You know, three is great. Why not four? And really clinch that green jersey.
You're going with Gamet then?
I think so. He's got to ride it. He's the fastest too. Today he looked the fastest. Tomorrow's going to suit him even more.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm going with Binnie too. Firstly, because he looks great, and secondly, because the tour tweeted the Kaiser Chiefs song, Ruby, 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 Ruby. They did Binnie.
How does that go?
Well, somewhat like that. You're not getting Harry Kane tonight, but you're getting Ricky Wilson, is it, off the Kaiser Chiefs? Anyway, but it's four rubies. Ruby, 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 Ruby. It didn't work today, did it? There's only three binnies, so we need a fourth.
But this time tomorrow, it might.
We can sing it.
All right. Well, we hope he does it. Boys, pleasure to be with you as ever. We will we'll find out tomorrow.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Byrne.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.